Before we get started, if you're planning on skipping the malls this year and doing your shopping online at Amazon.com during the holiday season, please go to our website, MysteriousTopics.com, first and click on our Amazon link, and we will get a little credit for that, and that will keep us in business here at MysteriousTopics.com, and we would appreciate that very much. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our coverage of The Curse of Oak Island, Season 4. Today we'll be discussing Episodes 2 and 3. That's the History Channel's series on Oak Island, and I'm joined, as usual, by Jordan from the Nighttime Podcast and Halifax, Nova Scotia. Hi, Jordan.
Hello, John. Hello, listeners of Mysterious Topics. Glad to be back talking Oak Island with you again. It seems like it was only been 2 weeks since we last recorded one of these, but it seems a lot longer than that.
Yeah, it does. So we'll start here with, as I said, episode two. And the name of this episode, the title of this episode, was Always Forward.
And usually the names of the episode has some relevance to the plot, but... Can you recall where during what happened in episode two that name would come from?
Yes, I can. And I'll talk about that towards the end of our discussion on episode two, because it pertains to that news. But let's start with, they started discussing that hatch that was at the end of the first episode, where they went out to look at this hatch that was on the map that we talked about in the first episode. That they got from a researcher on the Knights Templar, and it denoted a hatch, which just happened to be on, I believe it's on Dave Blankenship's property, and he remembered this depression.
Yeah, I think he said right on the property line. The mysterious thing he never thought to tell anyone about.
Yeah, Dave. So they're all out there looking at this hole, and Jack Begley is the one that was chosen to go down into the mud and see what he can dig up with a shovel, and he's trying to see if there's a bottom to it. And he was standing probably up to his knees in this mud, but he was standing on something hard, and they weren't going to get anywhere. He was like trying to use a shovel and a pail to try to get that out of there. And
it was way beyond that.
Yeah, they were never going to make any progress doing that. So they gave up, but there were... discussing the idea of bringing in more heavy machinery, and I'm sure that they probably will, because this is an interesting spot when you look at this map depiction calling it a hatch. And as we discussed on the last episode, about seems a lot like the TV show Lost with the hatch, but I don't know, it'll be interesting to see if they pursue that area.
Yeah, I'm trying to think like of what it could be. To me, it looks almost like it's like a fireplace kind of going down into the ground or something, because it has kind of that look, but there's not clear like brick or stone stacked. So that makes me think maybe it could be where a tree, like a big tree, was once upon a time, and the tree died, and you know, the stump is gone, but it just left this kind of depression. Like, and actually in my backyard, I have a spot where the previous homeowner, he had a large tree cut down. And I don't know if they pulled the stump out of the ground or what, but there's kind of a weird little depression in the ground. It's nothing like the hatch on Oak Island, but it's like a miniature version. So I don't know. We'll see what's down there. Definitely interesting.
You could see a chunk of rock. I'm not exactly sure what kind of rock it was, but sticking out, and they were talking about it, saying that it looked like it may have been chiseled away slightly. But it wasn't placed there. It's part of the bedrock, possibly, or just the natural rock there that somebody may have chiseled away to get around it. Maybe making a hole, but who knows? But the other thing on the map that was fairly nearby was something that was called the valve on that French map that they found in the book. So I don't know, like, you know, a hatch and a valve nearby. I just don't know what that would be about.
Yeah, I guess maybe we shouldn't read too much into the names until we see the actual sites. But it's just neat to have some new spots come up. Like, one thing about the show at this point is they've kind of, from the very first season, they had a few different locations they were looking at, like the site of the Money Pit, the Swamp, 10X, Nolan's Cross. Those are kind of the four main locations. And it seems like Rick and Marty from the beginning had set out to at least, if not find the answer, at least cross a couple places off the search. And they've really yet to do that. They've yet to really rule out any one of those locations. But they can't just search them forever. So it's kind of cool to have some new spots pop up. And maybe these new locations will be the smoking gun that leads us to an answer.
Yeah, possibly. It seems like every time they look like they're going to get an answer, they just come up with four or five more questions.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And everything that's kind of going against these locations to rule them out, the various experts and the various types of science they've applied, nothing has been conclusive. There's a question mark after every test that gets done. So, anyway.
Okay, so then they hopped back in their vehicle and drove back to New Ross to take a further look at that well. And they also brought along diver Tony Sampson, who has been on the show before. He's the Australian gentleman.
Yeah, what an accent.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's just kind of interesting that you find somebody in Nova Scotia that's from Australia.
Yeah, they come from all over to live in the most beautiful province in Canada.
And so anyway, he went down the well, first of all, they built a little rig to lower him down, kind of like, I think they call it a bosun's chair. So there's basically three beams making kind of a teepee thing, and then they lower him down on a rope and pulley. And he was just checking it out first without putting on any diving gear. And he found a couple of marks on the rocks.
Some compelling marks.
Yes, yes. And one of them that they said, that was kind of hard for us to see when they showed it, but it was a triangle apparently with an eye in the middle. Now, that triangle with the eye in the middle is very prominent in the Knights Templar area. They use that mark.
Templar lore, I guess you would say. Like, it's kind of...
Yes, and I forget exactly what it stands for, but it is very prominent. As a matter of fact, that same mark is on the United States $1 bill.
Mm.
And there were Freemasons back at that time of the construction of Washington, D.C., and a lot of the other... And, of course, the money. I forget who it was that had that placed on the dollar bill, but it was a Freemason, which are supposedly linked to the Knights Templar. And then they also found what looked like another triangle, but it also had another piece below to make it look like a kind of like an arrow. So the thing about these marks are they are related to the Knights Templar, and also... As they said on the show, those marks, the triangle and the arrow one, were on that rock that was found in Oak Island, in the money pit, with the inscriptions on it. Supposedly, you know, the same type of thing. So they are saying that there possibly could be some sort of link between this location and Oak Island.
Well, we'll see. I don't know if you know about this or if you watched it. It's actually this other show that I think you were the one who told me about it, called America on Earth with Scott.
Yes.
Walter?
Walter, yes.
Just last night, actually, I was online on the different Oak Island themed Facebook groups, and people were talking about how this place in New Ross was the focus of an episode of that show. So I went to searching and managed to find the episode. And sure enough, on the first the last episode of the first season of America on Earth, he was searching for Henry Sinclair's treasure, which he thought maybe the Holy Grail, and one of the locations they searched was the castle on New Ross, and they even investigated the same well, and I was kind of rolling my eyes a bit because it's the same production company, I believe, because that America on Earth, I think that's a production of the History Channel.
Yes.
But it had a lot of the same things happen as what happened in this episode. Like, they went down the well the same kind of way and even filmed from a similar angle, and they were seeing, you know, similar things on the walls. But then eventually they determined that there was nothing special about the well. So it was just kind of weird that they would revisit the site in much the same way. If you haven't seen it, you should watch, John. I watched it online just by Googling America on Earth, Holy Grail, and sure enough, I found the episode that way.
Yeah, I have to do that. I do know that Scott Walter has said before that there is nothing on Oak Island, and he has been there, and he said all the hype of talking about that there's just nothing to it at all. They're just wasting their time. You know, I don't remember if he thinks that there may have been at some time and it was moved.
Yeah, that's what he said in this episode. He's like, I do believe there was something there at one time and it was moved. And that was kind of what led him to New Ross. He was thinking maybe this is where it was moved to. But in the end, he concluded that there is nothing special about the well, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, well, I would take a lot of credence in that because he's been looking at these things for quite a long time, and he knows what he's doing. So that kind of puts a damper on the whole idea.
Yeah, and I feel like when they were making the show, this episode, they should have addressed that, because a lot of the same people are watching this that would America on Earth, as well as the TV show, The Curse of Oak Island. It has such a community of people discussing. I'm in myself in four or five different Facebook groups, all of which have upwards of 10,000 members. So there's a lot of people online theorizing and strategizing and coming up with different ideas. So something like this, it takes credibility away from the show producers to assume that your viewers aren't going to put it together. And that kind of bothered me. It's rare that the show does something that I don't like, but this is one thing that I thought they should have addressed that.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way. The only other thing that I thought was that they brought up, and now you might be able to confirm this, they were talking about the Knights Templar battle flag in comparison with the Mi'kmaq flag, who were the original inhabitants.
Yeah, good pronunciation for an American. I've heard some people butcher that. Yeah, the Mi'kmaq flag is almost the Mi'kmaq battle flag is almost identical to the Knights Templar flag. It's just the two symbols are reversed, their placement on the flag. But if you looked at the two of them side by side, they're identical flags, the same color, the same layout. It's just the two symbols are in the opposite places.
But yeah, it's just like you're putting one in a mirror. You're seeing a mirror image of the other.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know the history well enough to know why that would be or how they trace back, you know, the origin of the flag. But I think that's one of the pieces of evidence people use to link the Knights Templar to Nova Scotia.
Yeah, well, I think that's pretty strong evidence. Either that or it's just a huge coincidence.
Mm-hmm. And the Mi'kmaq were all over Nova Scotia. In fact, on a prior season of The Curse of Oak Island, as well as a prior episode of the Nighttime podcast, there was the Overton Stone made an appearance. Some people believe the Overton Stone may be linked to Oak Island. I don't remember the complicated theory that linked it, but the Overton Stone was thought to perhaps resemble a peace treaty between the native Mi'kmaq people as well as some European group that came here. But yeah, the history goes back very far, and the Mi'kmaq history gets intermixed with a lot of Oak Island lore and Knights Templar lore and Henry Sinclair and everything else.
Yeah, I think that episode they were linking the Mi'kmaq with the Portuguese.
Yeah,
the Portuguese faction of, I can't remember what they were called, but they were basically the Portuguese Knights Templar group, whatever mm-hmm. they were called. I can't remember.
It's funny how much history you learn watching The Curse of Oak Island.
Yeah, it's great. It's one of those things, like a a rabbit hole type thing when you start looking into it, and pretty soon you're looking into about five different areas.
Exactly.
And then towards the end of episode two, Rick came in with the sad news that Fred Nolan had passed away, and he seemed pretty shaken up by it.
Mm-hmm.
Then they all went in a group and went over to tell Dan Blankenship, and it was kind of weird watching him just in silence after he told him that. I was wondering, well, what's he going to say? Because these two were, as they said on the show, the Hatfields, like the Hatfields and McCoys, they were in a big dispute for many, many years, both working, both owning part of the island and working at trying to find the mystery and not really helping each other all those years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the history goes back very far. Yeah, I don't know what I thought of Dan's reaction. It was kind of, he didn't have a big reaction. That's not to say he wasn't affected by it emotionally. Like even, I don't know if I'd go as far as to say that they're enemies, but even someone you have a history of problems with, you don't wish something like that upon them. And Dan Blankenship seems like a very nice person. They may have had their difficulty, but I'm sure he was affected by the death of somebody whose legacy is so closely related to the Blankenship legacy, as well as their neighbors on a small island for the last 40 or 50 years. Also, Dan Blankenship, being an older man, it may affect him differently as well to hear of his peer who has a very similar history passing away, because I'm sure Dan Blankenship feels his own mortality as he gets in an advanced age, but seeing those around him pass away, I would think that'd be a little frightening.
Yeah, and I also wonder if he isn't thinking about just the lost opportunity if the two could have been working together all those years instead of working apart.
Mm-hmm. All the time they wasted.
Yes. And this will get us to segue nicely into episode three, because it kind of picked up right there where they left off with Mark. And this is why I think Rick was visibly shaken by the news, because he, as they say in the beginning of episode three, was going to be doing a lot of work in the swamp, and he was going to be working with Fred Nolan, who had previously done a lot of work in the swamp. And I think Rick is thinking, first of all, they finally got an agreement to work with Fred Nolan, and Fred Nolan is this huge resource of valuable information about Oak Island, and I just think that he felt that was taken away, and he's never going to be able to tap that resource.
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of information went away with him. He's been working on the island forever. He knows it inside out. Yeah, so definitely a blow, and maybe a sign to Rick and Marty that, you know, the clock is ticking, that there's these legends, Dan Blankenship and Fred Nolan, you know, these men are so old, and it's, you know, now is the time to conquer Oak Island. If it's going to happen, they're going to need to be involved, and it's going to have to happen now.
Yes. And so now, as they move into episode three, Rick and Charles Barkhouse were, I'm not sure if they were just walking around in the swamp or what they were in that area, and they find this little, what looks like a tile.
Yeah. Where they were is they weren't in the swamp initially. They were, the episode started with they're leveling off the site of the former money pit because they're going to start the big dig there. And they had shown up just after the first day's work. They cleared a roadway basically from and flattened a little bit of the site. So what it was just the top layer of soil was kind of tossed around. So they were just walking around and noticing the lumber and just the random debris. And they talked a bit about how that area was so upset by Dunfield when he did his work that they were fully expecting to find a lot of things he left behind. So again, they were noticing the lumber and all this. And then they found what they thought to be a tile. So that was on the site of the money pit.
Okay, yeah, and then they took it down to the swamp to wash it off, to take a closer look at it. And that's when they discovered this, what looked like an X on the tile. And then when Charles looked at it closer, I think he noticed that it actually had what they call a hook on it, a hooked X, which is, again, a big link to the Knights Templar, who apparently would use that hooked X in a lot of their inscriptions.
Yeah, it showed the rock, and to me, it didn't look unusual for the type of rock that I've seen on Oak Island. To call it a tile seemed like a bit of a stretch, but there was definitely something carved in the top. Whether it was natural or man-made is a different question. It definitely looked like a hooked X. I'm just thinking it would be very convenient that the one piece of carved stone you find happens to have the symbol of the people that you're looking for. Just to put it in perspective, it's like if you came to, I'm just going to say, a Catholic place, say you 1,000 years from now or 500 years from now, you come to the former ruins of the city of Halifax where I'm living. What are the chances that what you would find would be like, you know, just this little piece of something with like a Christian cross or, you know, whatever symbol? I don't know. It just seems unusual that that's the one thing they would find perfectly in the center of the stone. But I guess, yeah, it could happen.
Yeah, and I can see that, where whatever your beliefs are, you'd be looking for just that, and that's why you'd find it. But they did bring in later on in the episode a geologist by the name of Phil Fink, mm-hmm. who looked at that rock that they were calling a tile and said, you know, told them the kind of rock it was. It was some type of a sandstone, and there were the striations from other harder rocks scratching it. But then he did look at that X mark, and he said, well, this was made. Somebody put that on there. That's just not a natural striation. So a geologist did confirm that X was put on there. I don't know. He never did say, was it put on there yesterday, or was it put on there many, many years ago?
Who knows?
He would have known that as a geologist, so I wish he would have said something about that.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so then, again, diver Tony Sampson makes an appearance, and now they're getting him to go out into the swamp to check out some of the locations of... They got some metal-detecting hits from previous seasons, and they want to go back and take a closer look at those areas.
And like I said earlier, they've been unable to scratch the swamp off of, you know, their list of places that they want to invest their time and money and efforts. This just kind of goes into that. They're kind of just right back where they were. They had already scanned it. Now they're just kind of going back down looking for more pieces of metal. I'm not crazy about the idea of the swamp. I just think if they're going to do it, they should just drain the thing and just get into it and figure out what's going on in there.
Yes, and I agree, and I think we know, because I saw on the drilling down episode that it had been drained at that point. So I'm sure that's coming up, but it hadn't been drained to this point. And so Tony Sampson's down there with the metal detector, and there was what he said, there was a big stump down there, and there's something that where he's really getting hits. And of course they go to a commercial and they come back, and then he eventually pulls out an old surveyor's mark, which is a big metal spike basically, and they said, well, it has to be Fred Nolan's spike. And apparently Fred, now I don't think we said this earlier, but Fred, in comparison to Dan, when the two of them were working on the island all those years, whereas Dan was going down 10X and digging way down, over 200 feet down, and going down himself with diving gear on, Fred Nolan was always working on the surface. He was a surveyor, and that's what he knew, and that's what he focused on. And so he was, but he was apparently drawn to that swamp too. And mm-hmm. I think he, either the swamp water was lower at some time, or I don't know if he had it drained, but he had put a mark on the stump for some reason.
Yeah, I think a lot of his work was done in the swamp, and I think a lot of the disputes he had with Dan was over that area or that part of the island. I don't know exactly where the property lines are, but I understand that Fred Nolan's property includes quite a bit of the swamp, and I think that's where their trouble started, if memory serves me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know his property is directly across from the swamp, so the swamp is a triangle shape, and that tip of the triangle that's in the middle of the land is pointing right at Fred Nolan's house, I believe. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, he's very close. And Nolan's Cross, the rocks that those huge rocks that form a cross are right at that top. Well, they stretch across, but the long part of that cross rocks go right past the top of the swamp.
Hmm.
So now, then Tony Sampson, the diver, takes that out. Then they decide, well, we want to go to the other location that they had a lot of hits on from the previous year with a different guy that had a metal detector. And so they went to that location, and Tony Sampson, this was kind of cool, where he grabbed something, and it turned out to be what looked like a piece of lumber, but it was an 18-foot-long piece of wood.
Yeah, and it did look machined. Like, it did look like lumber doesn't, like, cut for a purpose. Like, it wouldn't just fall off a tree like that.
Oh,
so.
Absolutely not. But I wouldn't say that it was a piece of lumber that you'd go down to Home Depot today and get.
Oh, so, yeah, certainly not. This milled or whatever. Like, it was something probably specially cut for that length. 18 feet is a big piece of wood.
Or it could have even been hand cut somehow. Mm-hmm. With axes, but the first thing that came to mind was, because, like I said, nobody has 18-foot pieces of lumber except maybe for the huge cross beam on homes or something now, but this is obviously a very old piece of wood and had been down there for a long time, and they speculated on the show about this, that it makes a lot of sense that would have been from some sort of an old ship, either the decking or the planks on the side.
Well, they, near the end of the show, they eventually did carbon date it, but I don't know if that tells them when the wood was cut, because they dated it to 1680 to 1735. But I guess if they're dating the wood, it could have been a 70-year-old tree that was cut down and milled. But still, that tells you it's old, well before the time of Home Depot in Kent.
Absolutely.
Or is Rona big in the States? What's the American equivalent to those? You have Home Depot, right?
Yeah, Home Depot, Lowe's.
Do you have Kent?
No.
Okay, I think that's a Canadian. What about Rona?
No.
Okay.
So, as you continue, and they said where they got these big hits of metal, now all of a sudden they weren't getting any big hits. And Marty then said, well, as he was sitting, and of course, Marty and Rick were just sitting in the little inflatable dinghy. They weren't in the water at all. Of course, there was Jack again. He was in there helping Tony, the diver, out. But anyway, they were thinking, well, this is good that he didn't get any hits, because that means that it's from deep down. And I'm just thinking, well, wait a minute. You got hits with a metal detector the last time, and he's got a metal detector in the water this time. Why? What's wrong with this metal detector that it isn't getting the hits, whereas the other one did?
Yeah, they haven't had any luck with metal detectors on this island, especially in and around the swamp. And not only metal detectors that have been failing them, but all the other technology. It seems like whatever technology they use basically just screams gold at them until they, you know, get waist deep in a swamp or in a hole. And then all of a sudden it's like, nope, just a nail or, you know, a Fred Nolan survey stick from probably 45 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the other thing I was going to say, because they didn't find any nails in that long plank. They were looking for them, and they even ran a little metal detector wand over it.
Yeah.
But if it's from back in the 1600s, they probably weren't using nails then. I mean, they did have nails. They did use them, but they could also put ships together with just wood. And I'm not an expert on that, but I know that it can it can be done. So,
yeah, but even if it was nails, that likely at this amount of time, you know, 300 years past or whatever, those nails would be long gone, especially if they've been sitting in a swamp for the last 300 years.
Yeah, but there should be, they should be able to see if there were holes in there. You could tell that nails used to be there.
But the board would have been so waterlogged that maybe it swelled up. Maybe if they dried it out, they'd see it.
Yeah, that could be. Well, I'm sure they'll have more on that if they, you know, if they pursue that. But so was there anything else that happened on this episode that you wanted to go over?
No, just one idea I had early on in the episode when they were at the site of the former money pit. And everything was getting rolled over as they were flattening it. Just one thing is the amount of like they found pottery. If you remember, they found the piece of it.
Yes.
A dish or a plate or something. I think it'd be cool if, even if they didn't want to make it a big part of the show, they could just bring a group of even like archaeology students or something from a local university and just kind of go through it and just find what's there. Maybe they'd find some cool stuff. I just think it's just as I'm watching the show and just seeing it all the dirt getting piled up and they're finding these things. I'd just love to be there and spend a day, you know, digging and just see what I could find. I just think they should take advantage of the opportunity they have with everything being tossed over and have even volunteers or archaeology students just go in and see what turns up.
Yeah, heck, they should do that because they're there during the summer months. They could get volunteers, like you said, students or anybody. Heck, I'd volunteer.
Oh my gosh, I'd be there. I would go every weekend if they would let me.
Yeah, that would be a great summer trip to do.
Yeah, they do the tours, which we talked about a bunch of times, but they could do like a version of the tour where they just pick an area and you just to have it, you know, 100 people just kind of going through and searching and give them shovels and I don't know. There's so much, like some area, there's so much harm done and so many people have already, you know, flipped the ground over a couple of times that they might as well just do, you know, do stuff like that.
And they do this. I know they have vacations at archaeological sites where you can go and help out for however long a vacation you want to take, a couple of weeks or whatever. Maybe they should consider doing that at Oak Island where people can go there for a summer family vacation and dig around.
Yeah, but I guess if this is the last season of the show, then they're probably already planning what they're going to do on the island in future years. So maybe, you know, I'm sure they're looking at stuff like that.
Maybe
not that in particular, but I'm sure they're looking at some way to keep the island in the public eye and keep money coming in and stuff like that. There's this spot, I think it's in England. There was a short TV series made about it. And what you described of going on vacation to an archaeological site, it reminded me of this. It's a castle that's being made, and I'm sure it's in England, but they're making it using all the same technology they would have made when castles were originally made. So what people are doing is they're going on vacation to work, and when you show up there, you dress the way they would have dressed back in, you know, whenever they made castles, and eat the type of food, and the food's made by people who are using the same types of technology they would have used back then, and they had all these, the way the TV show worked is they had all these people from all over the world who would go there to work. So somebody would be like, let's say he's a stonemason from Germany. He'll go all the way here to spend a few weeks just, you know, working stone the way they would have done it way back in the day. And the castle, I think they've been working on it for like 15 or 20 years now, but it's beautiful. It's almost done at this point. I wish I knew the name of it. I hate to bring something up that I don't know the name. I'm just gonna Google Castle England being made TV show.
Yeah, I've not heard of that, but that sounds like a fun thing to do too.
Anyway, I'll find the name of it and maybe you can put it in the show notes. I know you'd love the show, John, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners would too.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right, yeah, I just found it. I said it was in England. It's actually in France. It's called Guédelon Castle. It's Guédelon Castle. I'm just looking at the Wikipedia site and the photos. Since even the show ran, it looks a lot better, a lot more done. It's called Secrets of the Castle. They started working on it in 97, but anyway, people may dig that.
Yeah, cool. Okay, well, I guess that wraps it up for episodes 2 and 3 of The Curse of Oak Island.
Yeah, overall, not a lot happened in those two episodes. We're at a slow boil. The show, I'm sure it's going to ramp up as the episodes go on. I don't know how many episodes are in this season. It's probably announced online, but these two episodes, not a lot happened. The biggest plot element was really the passing of Fred Nolan and the effect that had on the team. And you promised me, John, that you would tell me where the name Always Forward came from. Is it? I'm thinking now it's when Fred passed, they agreed to just keep working. Is that kind of where the name came from?
Yes, they said, I think.
From episode two?
Dave said something about, well, we got to keep moving forward, though, as they were leaving Dan's house. And then Rick said something about Always Forward. And then they cut to him explaining that, that his mother always said something in, I think it was Italian that he was saying it, but and it meant always forward.
Oh, cool. So, all right.
Yeah, so that came from.
Good. I missed that somehow, but once we started talking, I put it together in my head. But anyway, I look forward to talking with you again about episodes 4 and 5.
Yeah, we'll do that in 2 weeks. Until then, thanks again, Jordan.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, John.
And thanks to everyone for listening. Bye.